The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guest today is a return guest, and I think this is like six or seven times that David Meerman Scott has been on the show. A telltale sign for a successful business book is a second edition. The New Rules of Marketing and PR's first edition came out in 2007. The sixth edition is available on Amazon now. Six editions, 10 years. David, wow.
Yeah, wow. Hey, Mark, how are you? It's been great to speak with you over all of those 10 years. In fact, one of them we did in studio. Remember that?
I have pictures of that. Are you kidding? Yeah. They're up on the website.
Excellent.
Yeah. So anyway, just as a brief intro for people, New Rules of Marketing and PR came out in early 2007, and I was still on the cusp. I had been on LinkedIn at that point for over 3 years, and I'm wondering about this social networking thing. I still wasn't active. I read this book, and it doesn't even mention LinkedIn in the first edition or two, but I'm looking at what David's talking about, how all of these activities have morphed because of the web. And I took everything he said and applied it to LinkedIn, and, you know, steroids occur.
So, nice. I'm so glad.
But it's true. So talk to us about the evolution of the concept of the New Rules of PR.
Sure. Yeah, happy to. So my background, I worked both on a real-time bond trading desk, and I also worked in the real-time news business for companies like Reuters, Dow Jones, and so on. And that allowed me to have an unfair advantage about how electronic information is disseminated, so that when we had the tools available to reach people in real time, things like blogging and YouTube videos and so on, I was raring to go to get this stuff out there. And so I wrote the book initially in 2005 and 2006, and then, as you said, it came out in 2007. And interesting, during that time, Facebook was only for students. Twitter didn't exist. A lot of the other social networks, Instagram, Snapchat, whatever, didn't exist. And as you said, I didn't write about LinkedIn in the first iteration. But what I did write about is how your website and blogs and other kinds of content like photographs can really influence the ways that people find your organization, how you are indexed in the search engines, and how people relate to your business if you help them along the buying journey. And that was something that really resonated with people, because prior to that, you had to spend a whole lot of money on advertising to reach people, or you had to convince the media to talk about you, or you had to knock on doors one at a time. But these ideas are like, oh my gosh, I can create content and reach people. How cool is that? And what's changed over these six editions, I do an update approximately every 2 years, because there's constantly new tools out there. The strategies remain the same. It's about publishing great content that your buyers will be able to engage with. But what's different is that all of these new tools are out there that we can use. And I also use a lot of different examples of success.
Yeah, I mean, the one of the things, number one, you tell great stories, and you find great stories to tell.
Thank you. Thank you. I do. I mean, really, it's so important, because I want people to see themselves in the book. There's a great story in the new edition, the sixth edition, that I absolutely love. He's a builder in Austin, Texas, by the name of Matt Reisinger. And Matt became a builder in Austin, and he's doing custom homes that are expensive. They're from sort of $1.5 million up to, say, $5 million. And he entered the market 10 years ago when it was pretty saturated. There were people who had been in the business for a long time, and here's this young upstart, what the heck are you doing, building a business in Austin doing these custom homes? And he used YouTube to get noticed. He said he wanted to create this old house, but on YouTube. And so every week, without fail, he started to do a YouTube video explaining some aspect of the of building and how to build and what materials to use and whatnot. And slowly but surely, his YouTube channel grew so that last year, 2016, he had an aggregate of 3 million YouTube views for that year. And get this, Mark, this is my favorite bit of this. Not only did it grow his business from zero to $15 million in annual revenue as of 2016, but also, and I love this, he monetizes his YouTube channel. He actually sells sponsorships on his YouTube channel to companies that sell building supplies. And so, you know, companies like window manufacturers and whatnot pay him. And he generated $150,000 in revenue from his YouTube channel. So not only is YouTube growing his business, but YouTube has turned into a revenue source.
you just can't, you know, make up stuff like this.
That was fantastic.
You know, you were the first absolutely one that fantastic introduced me to the United Breaks Guitars, which now has like a, I don't know, 20 million, 30 million views.
Yeah, I haven't checked recently, but no. A lot. Yeah.
But every time you watch it, it's still funny.
Yeah. And interestingly, that video came out quite a few years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, yet it got a huge bump a couple of months ago when that United incident where they dragged where they dragged that poor guy down the aisle by his hair. And it got, oh, you know, United Breaks Guitars, we got to check that out because now United is breaking some guy's teeth.
Yeah, I tweeted that that Dave should crank out a new video.
Yeah, he could, actually. I'm not sure if he did, but he certainly could have.
I don't know what you'd make funny about that one, though.
No, but certainly it's United Airlines sort of not paying attention any again.
Boy, oh boy. And, yeah, it just there's always fodder for this, but it doesn't have to be, you know, extremely funny or exciting. Your builder, there's probably not much humor there, but he probably gives great ideas.
He gives fantastic ideas, and I just actually built a custom home myself. Well, I don't live in Austin. I live in the Boston area, so I couldn't have used Matt Reisinger's company. But as I was going through the process of, number one, figuring out who I was going to work with, and then, two, getting bids, nobody that I spoke with had a YouTube channel. If they had, I would have been extremely interested in checking out that YouTube channel to find out how they do their work, what I might learn about materials that I can use. And that would have made me predisposed to spend all my boatload of money with that particular builder. In the end, there wasn't anyone who did that, and I kind of went on the traditional approach of word of mouth. But certainly, that is the way you get noticed. And it doesn't matter whether it's business to business or business to consumer, as Matt Reisinger example is, or B2G. I mean, it all works the same way. You create the great content that people want to consume, and that drives business.
So, you know, the content thing, I really want to get started. Let's get started after the break, because I definitely want you to take a deep dive there. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'll be back with David Meerman Scott after this. The sixth edition of the New Rules of Marketing and PR is out. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here today with David Meerman Scott, author of The New Rules of Marketing and PR. author of Newsjacking, another great book, Marketing Secrets of the Day, Grateful Dead, that he did with Brian Halligan of HubSpot, another great book. The Marketing Secrets of the Grateful Dead, by the way, is just an excellent educational read, as well as being a lot of fun. And it's from a source that you really don't think about as marketing experts. And boy, were they.
They absolutely were. And the main reason was they created a social network before Mark Zuckerberg was even born, a social network of their fans, primarily by doing something that was radical. What they did was they allowed fans to record their concerts. And then that created, initially it was cassette tapes, then it turned into MP3s, but that created a whole network of people who traded the tapes. And then that drove people to want to buy tickets to the concert because they got exposed to the music in their dorm rooms or in their friends' car stereos or whatever it is. And I have a story, Mark. So Brian Halligan, my co-author, I don't know if you saw this, last month bought Jerry Garcia's Wolf guitar, one of Jerry Garcia, the lead guitarist of the Grateful Dead, one of his very favorite guitars, and he paid $1.9 million at auction for that guitar. And I am going with Wolf and Brian out to Colorado to Red Rocks to Jerry Garcia's 75th birthday celebration. Of course, Jerry Garcia passed away in 1995, but this is his 75th birthday celebration, and Wolf will be played from the stage at Red Rocks. So Jerry's instrument will yet again be firing away on all cylinders. So there's my little Grateful Dead story for us this morning.
How cool is that? And I won't even ask how many Grateful Dead concerts you've been to or what the color of your VW bus is.
Well, the answer to the first question is over 50, but the other one, we'll talk about that later.
Well, yeah, offline. So I want to get back to the concept of content. For Grateful Dead, the content was the music, and they shared it for free, and it created a following unlike any in music history.
Absolutely.
Arguably the most rabid of fans, rabid in a good sense, not a bad sense. But it was the content. So take a dive here into the power of content for regardless of the market.
Yeah, so in the Grateful Dead's case, they played over 3,000 concerts in their career, and each concert was different in terms of the set list and how they put the different songs together. And that made it people really excited about wanting to see multiple shows. If you saw a band like Pink Floyd, the Rolling Stones, you typically would hear the same set list. Maybe they'd sneak one new song in, but you'd essentially hear the same set list in the same order. The Grateful Dead, you never knew what to expect, and therefore people would go to three or four concerts in a row, or multiple concerts over the course of a year or their lifetime, and because they never knew what to expect. And that was a really interesting sort of approach to getting their music out there. It made them the most popular touring band in history at the time that they were the most popular in the 1990s. And I think that that idea can be applied to what we're doing today, the idea of creating information that will be interesting to people, creating the sort of content that will drive people into your business, whether that's in the form of blog posts or in the form of a podcast or a YouTube channel. But the more interesting you make it and the more valuable you make it, the more people are going to pay attention to it and the more people who will be driven into your business. And it's almost like magic. And the cool thing is that it's free, unlike advertising. So it's a really fantastic way to get noticed.
Okay. So I generate a lot of content. I have the radio show. I have a column in a trade publication.
And you do a ton on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I do a ton on LinkedIn and my own blog. I also have three books in the work. One actually finally on LinkedIn.
Nice. And my guess, Mark, is that you have not picked picked up the phone to solicit business in 10 years because business comes to you?
I can't even think the last time I called somebody.
Yeah, because not for that. Comes to you. Yeah, business comes to you. Because that's how this works. The more you put out there, the more breadcrumbs you have pointing to your business in the breadcrumb trail, and the more people who will then find you, learn about what you're doing, and want to do business with you.
Yeah, and this has probably happened to you a few more times than it's happened to me, but every now and again I'll be at a function and I'll introduce myself and somebody will say, I have your book on my shelf.
Yeah, it's always fun. Or the other one that I love is, you know, you're sort of walking down the aisle on an airplane or a train, or one time I was at a beach resort in the Caribbean and there's somebody reading my books. Like, that's pretty freaking cool.
Yes. Well, I'm not likely to see that because I'm not in my sixth edition. By the way, sixth edition, last time we talked, I think there was like 20-some-odd million copies of New Rules in one form or another out there. You have any clue how many are out there now?
The best guess on print books is 375,000 in English, and the book is also out in 29 other languages, from Albanian to Vietnamese. And I wouldn't even know how to count things like the audiobook version or the ebook versions. But I do know in print it's roughly 375,000 in English.
That's very impressive.
It's a big number. It's a big number, and it's. Yesterday, I got my shipment of 200 copies of the new book, and I had to carry them from the UPS truck to my storage room. And I was, and it took like 10 minutes. It was, it was I don't know, 10 boxes of 20 books a piece, and they're not heavy, they're not light when you're carrying books like that. And I was thinking to myself as I was doing it, imagine what 375,000 books looks like if it were stacked up in a pile. And I was imagining that as I was carrying this meager 200 book packages into my storage room. It's like, wow, the physical size of 375,000 books would just be incredible. And it gave me a warm and fuzzy feeling, I have to admit, Mark.
You know, there's nothing like seeing your name on a cover of a book for the first time.
Oh yeah, just fantastic! Nothing like absolutely. When that box shows up, the first book that print already hot off the printer, it's incredible.
Yep. So I want to talk to you for a couple of minutes about where you get ideas, because I set up Google Alerts for a number of topics in my market, and that's my perpetual feed. So I never lack for something to write about. But for you, given the breadth of the marketplace, are you just out there trolling, or do you have feeds coming in?
I'm doing a lot of different things because one of the things I really like to do is talk about things before other people have. And if something has become popular for some reason, I tend to sort of back off and not talk about that particularly very much, especially if it's a story of success. So what I do, I'm weird in that I still read a print daily newspaper. I live in the Boston area, so when I'm at home, it's the Boston Globe. If I'm in the D.C. area, it'll be the Washington Post. But wherever I am, I read an English language print newspaper. I want to see what the editors are saying. Yes, I do have some feeds, but the thing about feeds is that if you narrow a feed by putting in search terms, by definition, you're excluding 99.9999% of what's out there, and I like to see things without the narrowness of putting the words and phrases in. So I look at, I'm a huge fan of serendipity, the happy accident of finding something that you never thought to ask for. So I open myself up for serendipity. I also open myself up to sort of triangulating the things that I'm deeply interested in and marketing and sales. So, for example, we talked earlier about marketing lessons from the Grateful Dead. That's a good example of that. But I'm also a huge fan of the Apollo Moon program. And so I wrote a book called Marketing the Moon that came out a couple of years ago. And that's all about the marketing aspects of the Apollo Lunar program. If there hadn't been marketing and public relations around the lunar program, then 12 humans would not have walked on the surface of the moon, because we never would have been able to get the agreement of the American people to fund that program. So that was another example of a big idea that actually turned into a book that started just by triangulating the things that I'm interested in, something no one had ever thought to write about, marketing and the moon. And in fact, that's actually now in production as a major documentary film, and the rights to that film have already been pre-sold to PBS. So that's exciting that, you know, just...
Well, tell them to do the new rules, too.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool, wouldn't it?
It would.
But the idea that you just, that in my case, I take something that interests me as sort of a hobby and then say, wow, you know, hey, I wonder how they convinced the American public that we should spend however many billions of dollars to put
it
people on the surface of the moon. It was 3%
of the annual GDP, or the government contracting spend in a
for
significant
a
part of the 60s, yeah.
For a and, decade, as yeah. well as 2% of the workforce.
Yeah.
And we, meaning the American people, convinced ourselves that that was something worthwhile doing. And then I wanted to write about how that happened, and that's what I wrote. That's why I wrote that book. But I think that anyone can do that. Anyone can sort of say, "Wow, I'm seeing a pattern that no one else is seeing. I'm seeing something that's really interesting that I should be writing about, or I should be creating a YouTube video about, or I should, you know, start a podcast around, or whatever it might be." And any one of us can do that.
Well, it's true, because as I'm coaching individuals or companies on developing a subject matter expert platform, I'm picking their brains, I'm getting them to narrow down their field of expertise, and then I say, who's writing about this? And they go, well, nobody really. And I'm going, bingo!
Right. And you're absolutely right, because so many people say, oh my God, there's you know, hundreds of millions of blogs out there. How am I ever going to get noticed? I never can. Therefore, I'm not going to do anything around blogs or whatever it is. I mean, just pick something. But you're absolutely right. As soon as you start thinking about niches, then it's wide open. You know, and in my case, yeah, there's many thousands of marketing books out there, as we certainly know, but no one had written about marketing in the Grateful Dead, and no one had written about marketing in the Apollo Moon program. So all of a sudden, there's two, distinct niches that that did not exist that I was able to apply my skills to.
There you go. I'm talking today with David Meerman Scott, author of the 6th edition and the previous 5 of the New Rules of Marketing and PR. You're listening to federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, and David and I'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. I'm here today with my friend David Meerman Scott, author of the New Rules of Marketing and PR. The 6th edition is out now. So, David, I want to follow up a little bit on that niche thing. For people who have a narrow niche, be it a consumer niche, a business niche, or a B2G niche, the huge numbers don't necessarily matter.
Oh, that's absolutely true, Mark. I mean, I think, you know, if you're in the hamburger business, you kind of need some big numbers. You know, if you're Wendy's trying to compete with McDonald's and Burger King, you need some big numbers. But if you're selling an enterprise software application that's only sold to the largest businesses in the world, or you're building runways for major airports, or you're providing a particular service to some aspect of the federal government, you're not talking about huge numbers. You're talking about a very discrete and distinct niche. And if you create the right content, and it's only, and I put that in air quotes, only consumed by 500 people, that may be the 500 most important people on the entire planet for your business. So, for example, if your company makes airport runways, and every airport manager in the U.S. is reading your stuff or watching your YouTube videos, that's huge for you, because that's your marketplace, even though if the numbers on the YouTube channel are small, you know, only a couple of hundred views of every video. So I think people tend to get too hung up on the raw numbers, especially if you compare them to the numbers of consumer products and services out there, or the people who are famous for being famous, Kim Kardashian sort of people. I mean, they don't even get out of bed for more than a million views, for less than a million views. So, you know, it's a completely different market for those of us, and I include myself in that, who are servicing niches.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Chris Anderson's book early in the new edition, the concept of the long tail, and this plays right into that.
Oh, absolutely. The idea of the long tail is that with the web, you can all of a sudden make profitable niches, because you can deliver information and or products and services to people who make that profitable, even if you sell a very small number of individual things to a very large number of people. So, for example, the idea of the long tail kind of got going for me, and I started to understand it around Amazon.com. Because prior to Amazon.com, you had to go to a physical bookstore. And a physical bookstore, even the very biggest bookstore, could only sell tens of thousands of books of different titles at the most. So if you were the author of the 50,000th most popular book in the United States, you would not get any shelf space, because your book wasn't popular enough for it to be stocked in the bookstores. But all of a sudden, Amazon.com comes along, and they'll happily stock a book that only sells two copies a year. And so all of a sudden, the idea of the niche and the long tail becomes incredibly viable. And then I just extended those ideas from Chris Anderson's idea of selling products to the ideas of marketing, where a niche of trying to reach just 500 people who are the right people for your enterprise software application all of a sudden becomes incredibly viable with the web, whereas you couldn't possibly reach those people if you were paying for advertising in magazines or newspaper or television or radio.
No. Yeah. And I want to take this back to where I get my ideas for content. The Google Alerts works for me, and every now and again I'll run across this obscure press release as a result of the Google Alerts, but it puts me in a position to do something that you've written extensively about, and that's newsjack.
Newsjacking, yeah, absolutely. Newsjacking is how you take advantage of a news story that's breaking in the marketplace, where you have a particular area of expertise around that news story. So, and every single one of us, every single person listening in here, has an opportunity to do newsjacking. The way it works is when a story breaks, and you see that, and you go, "Wow, I know a lot about that particular story," then you should immediately create a piece of content, whether that's a blog post or a YouTube video or a Facebook Live post or a tweet with a hashtag, whatever it might be, and get your take on that news story into the marketplace, because that, when that news story is breaking, is the precise moment that members of the media are looking for people to quote, and then possibly people are looking for products and services to buy as a result. An example in my own life of that, which was really cool for me, was I've been writing about the marketing aspects of the U.S. presidential election cycle since way back to the 2000 cycle. And in 2000, 04, 08, 12, 16, every single cycle, I've been writing about the marketing aspects. And I wrote extensively about Donald Trump in this cycle and how Donald Trump was the most real-time candidate. Now, I'm not talking about politics, not suggesting anything around what he was tweeting about and what he was doing in real time, but the fact is that Donald Trump was the most real-time candidate, and therefore, that was a huge reason he got elected. One of the examples of Trump doing newsjacking was that during Hillary Clinton's DNC speech, probably the most important speech of her life, Donald Trump live tweeted that speech. Now, what that meant is that whenever the news stories came out about Clinton's speech, they had to include the comments by Trump that he was live tweeting. So I wrote a lot about Donald Trump over the last couple of years, as you know, when he declared his candidacy up until the election. And as we all know, it was a surprise that he won. The polls did not suggest he was going to win. The pundits did not suggest he was going to win. And people were surprised when he did win. And at that time, I, in the middle of the night, wrote a blog post. The blog post title was "The Best Marketer Was Elected President." I pushed the button on that blog post at 4 a.m. Now, imagine people are saying, well, geez, why did Donald Trump win? Why did we miss that? What's going on? And then they would find my blog post because I tweeted it out. I pushed it on the social networks. They would find it if they did a Google search. And then I had dozens of media outlets, some as far away as Australia, in fact, who quoted my article without even talking to me. They were just quoting my blog post, quoted my article in articles about why Donald Trump won. And then, so that got me media attention. And then I got inquiries for speaking. And in fact, I did end up doing a speech as a result of somebody finding me that way for the Public Affairs Council in Washington, D.C. I did a presentation on why Donald Trump won the election. And that came directly from the blog post that I wrote. And anybody can do that. Doesn't matter your product or service, but just inject your expertise into the market at the precise moment that people are interested, like Donald Trump did when Hillary Clinton was giving her speech, or like I did when people were looking for reasons why Donald Trump won.
Well, the simple fact that Trump was perpetually tweeting allowed him to literally co-opt the news and get billions of dollars worth of free advertising. I defy anyone out there in a street conversation to name three of the other 17 Republican candidates from memory.
Exactly. Yeah, and he did. He spent less money on advertising, way less money than Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush ended up spending, and there's one of the three, Mark. Jeb Bush actually
I almost forgot.
$100 million on advertising. During the same period, Trump only spent $10 million. But Trump ended up during that period of time with $2 billion worth of free media attention, while Jeb Bush got next to nothing. So that's what won the election this cycle. I'm not suggesting that someone can use Twitter in the same way that Trump did in the 2020 cycle, but that certainly got him elected in this cycle. And the same thing can be true of your business, that you can use these tools to reach people at the right moment. The tools are free. And the idea of newsjacking is simply when there's something going on that you have an expertise around, that is the moment that you have to push your thoughts out there. You can't wait till tomorrow. You have to push it out right now.
There you go. So we're going to take a break. I'll be back with David right after this. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here today with David Mearman Scott. David's sixth edition of the New Rules of Marketing and PR is out now. Sixth edition, first edition in 2007, sixth edition 2017. Way to go, man. That's quite a feat.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah, it's really exciting. I mean, when I was writing the first edition, I actually wrote back in 2005 and 2006, never, ever dreamed that we'd be 10 years later and six editions later. It's amazing.
It's very cool. So a little while back, you mentioned to me something about Sonic branding. Tell me what this is and what you're doing in this arena.
So Sonic branding is essentially branding using music. And many people who are in the marketing space and many people who have, running businesses understand the idea of branding when it comes to things like logos. That's one aspect of branding. Colors is another aspect of branding. What words you use in your materials is another form of branding. But what people, very few people understand is how you can use music in your branding. Now, there's a number of different ways that you can get music. You can steal it, which I highly do not recommend because you can go to jail. So use music that you don't have the rights to. Number two, you can buy music from a stock music house. But the problem with that is that music that you buy from a stock music house to use in your branding has anybody else can use it, including your biggest competitor. And what we do, I formed a little company called Signature Tones. What we do is we do custom music that people can use in their branding. Now, how would a company use music? Well, people are familiar with using it in advertising on radio and television, but you can also use custom music as the intro to your radio program or your podcast. You can use it as a background to your YouTube videos. You can even use it within software products. So, for example, in the B2B market or the B2G market within software or educational products, there can be either sonic logos, which is six or seven or eight or a dozen notes, or it can be an entire song, and that could be part of the product itself. So a sonic logo is something like the NBC chime or the Skype ringtone or the Nokia ringtone. Those are famous sonic sonic logos.
NBC's three notes, yeah.
You got it. That's exactly a perfect example. And so my company I founded with a touring musician by the name of Juanito Pascal. He's amazing. He's a bunch of CDs out. And so we work with companies to create custom music based on the branding that that company already has, so it fits in with their business very, very strongly. And then they can either get an entire song or just a sonic logo. And we recently worked with a company that installs solar systems all over the country, in fact, for some government agencies as well. And they recognize that none of the companies in their space, there's 25 or 30 companies that do what they do in the solar business, none of them used music in their branding. So they wanted to do that, and they worked with us to create something.
You ought to talk to Brian about using that guitar.
There you go. Absolutely. We talked earlier in this program about my love of music, and I love the intersection of music and marketing. And we talked about earlier, I wrote this book called Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead, but this idea of sonic branding was a really cool way to have that intersection of music and marketing come up in yet a different way for me.
But what, can you pinpoint a moment in time when this crystallized for you?
Absolutely. So I speak frequently at conferences.
So I've seen.
Yeah, and I used to put myself at the mercy of whatever conference organizer in order to create the music that I walk onto stage on. I also have a number of YouTube videos that I've put out, and I was always a struggle to figure out what's the music I want to use in my YouTube video. So I ended up several years ago actually getting a custom song made for me, and it was like, wow, this is like real. really, really cost effective when you think about the price of it. And I use it all the time. And now the same music is, you know, whenever I need music, I use my own music. I already own the rights to it. I don't have to pay for it. And people, when they hear it, if they've heard it in different places, they maybe heard it on my YouTube video. Maybe they heard it on as I was walking onto the stage or in some other place. Like they subtly don't necessarily proactively remember it, but like, yeah, it sounds like David Mirren Scott. Well, yeah, that's because it's just theme music. And then I thought, wow, how cool would it be to create that for other people? And that's why I started this business.
You know, and that's a perfect analogy for you know, the new rules of marketing and PR, because you're taking something that's kind of traditionally been with us subliminally, the NBC yes. thing, you know, a couple of commercials, especially from the 50s, you know, a couple of jingles were yes. popular, and
yes. know,
some of us might remember them. But putting that
hot
new
dogs,
spin on it.
Armor hot dogs.
BLO, the bologna one.
My bologna has a first name. And we, just to be clear, we don't do jingles. We create music that is perfectly appropriate in sort of B2B environments and whatnot. But at the same time, that's a perfect example of how music can be used for branding, because even now, 50, 40 years later, we remember those silly songs.
Well, you know, there's just tons of those things that, you know, every now and again I'll hear a three-bar riff or something, and that Oscar Mayer song will pop into my head, and I can't get rid of it.
Exactly.
So we're going to wrap up in a couple of minutes here. So I want to talk briefly about, number one, freshspot.com is David's blog. He is on multiple social networks. He is on LinkedIn. He is on Facebook. Has a YouTube channel. Don't know if you're on Google Plus or not.
I am on Google Plus, although I haven't done much with it recently.
Kind of hard to do things with it outside of that chat room feature they have, which is cool.
Yeah.
So
yep.
Where do you spend your time online?
So what I tend to do is I spend at least 4 or 5 times on Google News every single day without any personalization on it. I want to see what's going on in the news. I want to see, you know, what's the breaking stories in that are happening right now around the world and in this country and in the various different categories of news. I also tap into my Twitter feed the same number of times, 5, 6, 7 times a day, just to see what's going on. Facebook and LinkedIn I'll try to go to at least once a day, more likely 2 or 3 times. But, sounds like a lot, but it's less than a half an hour a day if you add all that up. Because I'm only going in for several minutes at a time. You know, if I go into LinkedIn, I just bang, 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 check it all out. Thank you very much, and I'm done. And I do it during downtime. I do it if I'm waiting on hold. I do it if I'm waiting in line at a checkout counter at a store or in a restaurant waiting for someone to join me for lunch. I have little moments of downtime which are perfectly suited to jumping onto my various feeds. So even though, you know, I'm the guy who wrote the book, people are really surprised when I say I'm only spending about a half an hour a day on all of these various social networks and online services.
Yeah, I spend a half hour a day watching Dave's United Breaks guitar. David, it's always fun, man.
Absolutely, Mark. I appreciate it.
SignatureTones.com, is that correct?
Yes, please. You
okay.
got it.
FreshSpot.com for David's blog. SignatureTones.com for if you want music for your company logo, for your brand. And the book is The New Rules of Marketing and PR. Go to your favorite online bookseller. Is there more than one? and get it. It's a tremendous read. I got an advanced copy about 3 weeks ago, and David, I already have about 40 tabs in it.
Awesome. That warms my heart, Mark. Thank you for telling me.
Very cool. My guest has been David Mirman Scott. And thanks for coming on. This is not my day job. If you need help either with your federal marketing or particularly social selling, leveraging LinkedIn, give me a call. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.